All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, I'll tell you the real reason Colin Kaepernick hasn't gotten another shot in the NFL.
And if the Lakers need to be worried about pinning their future on LeBron. But we start every day with a Whitlock. Hit him, big dog.
Liking Zion Williamson doesn't mean you now have to like Duke basketball. I don't, and I likely never will. See, I never had a problem with the individuals on the Duke team. I loved everything about Grant Hill. Jay Billis is arguably the smartest sports broadcaster working today. Christian Laettner's college career rivals Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's and Bill Walton's. Hey, look, one of my best friends in life, Kirk May, played football at Duke. I was the first member of the media to publicly defend the Duke lacrosse players when they were falsely accused of rape. But let me be clear, I don't like Duke. And the fact that Zion Williamson is the most exciting thing to happen to college basketball since the Fab Five won't change that. So you go ahead, fill out your NCAA bracket today, pick number one overall seed Duke to win it all. Zion has made it fashionable to root for Duke. Last week, my friend Jesse Washington wrote a long-winded piece for ESPN's The Undefeated, explaining why it's cool and hip to like Duke now. He mentioned that Jay-Z, Spike Lee, LeBron James, and even former President Barack Obama have jumped on the Zion Duke bandwagon. Not me. I love Zion, his energy, the joy he emotes with his play, the fact he came back to play with his boys rather than use his knee injury as an excuse to sit out until the NBA draft. Loving the fruit doesn't mean you have to love the tree. The Duke tree is poisoned with elitism. In the sports world, nothing is more elitist than Duke basketball. And I don't like elites. Never have, never will. The promoted public perception that Duke basketball approached the game in a more ethical fashion than their peers always bothered me and still does. Duke looked down on Jerry Tarkanian's outlaw UNLV program. Duke looked down on John Calipari's one-and-done approach. Duke fans and Coach K seemed to revel in the perception that they were the good guys and their competitors were all different versions of Darth Vader. For three decades, Mike Krzyzewski had the luxury of recruiting and coaching the two-parent kids. I don't begrudge him that. He's an awesome coach, the modern-day John Wooden. But I also think coaching two-parent kids is an easier job than coaching the talented kids from poverty and broken homes. John Thompson in Georgetown rescued Allen Iverson from a prison cell. John Calipari in Memphis helped Derrick Rose escape the educational dysfunction and chaos of Chicago's South Side. Yep, Thompson and Calipari did it to win basketball games. Coach K's motives are no different. That's why he's embraced the one-and-done concept. He and Duke have no more or less integrity than the rest of big-time college basketball. I think it's hypocritical and shallow to jump on the Duke bandwagon simply because you like Zion Williamson. Duke is still Duke. Elitist, snobby, and easy to root against. All right, joining the desk now are Clay Travis and Cousin Sal from Lock It In. Be sure to catch them live from Las Vegas starting on Wednesday this week. But let's start with the Columbia elite grad, Marcellus Wiley. Yes. Is it hypocritical to jump on the Duke bandwagon now because Zion's there?
A lot said there. We'll slowly unpack this. But to stay in alignment with the question and answer it directly, no, it's not hypocritical. If you were a Duke hater, congratulations. They've conformed to you and your ideals and the things that you hated about Duke. They changed their ways. If you were someone in the 80s and 90s who looked at Duke as not being urban enough, not representing the black players equally, if you were someone, and I wasn't one of those people, true disclosure, full disclosure, I was too invested in my own career to be worrying about what these guys were doing and not doing at the collegiate basketball level. But I will say that anyone who was on the other side of Duke, you should be thankful for this moment because they came to you and now they agree with your ideals.
They still elitist.
They all are, though. But that's the second question.
I think this is about Zion, not about Duke. I think it's about the name on the back of the jersey more than the name on the front of the jersey, because I think right now if Zion was playing for Kentucky, it would be all about Zion, right? I think if he was at UNC, it would be all about Zion, too. I don't know that Duke has changed itself so much as Zion is the reason. I don't think this is a Duke bandwagon. I think it's a Zion bandwagon. And I think when he leaves, people can go right back to hating Duke because they probably aren't going to have another Zion Williamson ever again. By the way, Vanderbilt elitist here. You got a Columbia elitist. Ball State's in a high cotton right now. Well, I don't know. Sal, you got
Oswego State, New York. I could drift out of the point. No, I hate to say, but I agree with you. This is a once-in-a-lifetime player, and I think once he goes away, no one cared who Bo Jackson played for. If you were a Rams fan, you wanted to see Bo Jackson take charge and go crazy and break bats over his knees. This is going to be the same thing. Unfortunately, if you root for Zion, you have to root for Duke. If you want that thunderous slam... But if you want that thunderous dunk down one at the end of the game, you're going to be rooting for the team. His points have to count. But the only thing I'll say is, like, he'll be gone. You can move on to the next guy. This guy is just going to be great. He's always already going to be the second heaviest NBA player once he gets there. He doesn't have to grow. He's a freak of nature. Everyone wants to be on the bandwagon. Everyone wants to root for him, and that's why we're doing it.
I just read before this show that Duke is the heaviest Vegas favorite since Kentucky in 2014 or 15. And to me, that's not, because this tournament to me is wide open.
Yes. Yeah.
What that says is everybody's just, oh, I know who Zion is, and I want to see Zion win. Let me throw money on Duke. And I'm sitting there going, no, man, I still enjoy disliking Duke. And I don't care. I love Zion. But I'm not rooting for Duke basketball. I'm sorry. I want him to get beat in the first round.
That was a really fantastic open, by the way. Great essay. You should be writing on television and on the internet. Well, go ahead and make that argument right now. Or newspaper. But here's the other thing. I think what you hit on, to me anyway, is the distinction between the meritocracy and the aristocracy, right? I think Duke very often feels like the aristocracy. And in America, I think uniquely, we don't like the idea that because of how you were born, you
break,
deserve.
Vanderbilt break. Explain aristocracy.
Aristocracy
to me
is
and
like.
Our viewers.
Yeah, for everybody out there.
Start here.
I think it's a big distinction because I've had this conversation a lot. If Marcellus went to Columbia, I went to Vanderbilt, I would say we are meritocracy. I don't know your background. My family was not wealthy. So I felt like it was a really great opportunity to get in there. I think what people see is they want to believe in the meritocracy, that no matter where you come from, you can rise up and end up in an elite institution. I think all too often what we see is what we just saw at USC, the aristocracy. Your mom and dad are wealthy. You're going to buy your way into a school. And I think Duke, uniquely because of being in North Carolina, you got UNC, which is a great public school filled with North Carolinians. And then you got Duke, the private school that brings in all these East Coast rich kids, right? And so the tension that I don't think gets talked about enough is we like the meritocracy in this country, but I think Duke very often feels like the aristocracy, and that's what I don't like. And I think that's what you don't like.
I love it, and I wish I had known what aristocracy was in my monologue because I would have hammered this point.
Go back. Let's start over.
Yeah. You had to be from a two-parent family to go
play
at Duke.
Yes.
You had to come from Grant Hill. I love Grant Hill.
Yep.
Love his dad. But again, that's an elite family. Grant Calvin Hills, his dad, his mom
was the roommates of Hillary Clinton.
Yes. That's Duke is very elite.
But then see, that's where I get lost. And when you're aspirational, no one ever says, you know what? My goal is to be average. My goal is to be with the crowd. Your goal is to aspire to be the greatest. Whatever you want to say is synonymous with being elite. There are elite athletes that go to Duke, and there are elite athletes that go to other programs. What became the distinction is, one, there were more white elite athletes at Duke, and two, the distinction was, you know what, the level of black player at Duke. We started to destroy a Grant Hill who is aspirational, who is coming from a family that we all wish and desire to come from or to leave our family in that position. Think about it. You got an executive mother and a father who's playing pro ball, and then the son says, hey, I have now got talent to a place where I'm elite, and now we're going to now undermine those same talents. But then we look at John Thompson, respect, but then we say, oh, see, that's the kind of coach I want, kind of program I want. He went to jail to go get a player. Why? Because the player was elite. Like, elite is the conversation, but it's also the commonality. All these programs, no matter how it is seen and how it is perceived, they all want elite athletes, black, white, nuclear family, or dysfunctional.
Here's what I would say also, and I'll let you jump in here in a sec. I think what people fight on the elite version is George W. Bush elitism. you're standing on third. You're born on third and thought you hit a triple, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of people fight against. Right. But elite overall aspirational, as Marcellus is saying, I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the challenge is for a school like Duke to not be the version of USC where everybody's buying their way in the back door, side door entrances. You want people who deserve to be there, everybody being treated equally, I think.
I think Coach K, I mean, you can label it whatever you want, but elitist or not, Coach K is 72 years old, something like that. He's going to win at all costs. He's figured out the game. Once you get to that age, you get to Jerry Jones, you're like, all right, I'm taking the Amari Cooper. I don't care if this is a dumb deal. Yeah. I'm doing it right now, and we'll shake it out at the end. You know, elitist, he's at 66th McDonald's All-American. So he goes after the good players at any cost. So you'll see. And the problem I think that's going to happen is in the future, you're going to see a guy like Zion. We saw he blew out his shoe. There was a chance he was going to sit out this whole tournament. Like, you might see guys like this saying, hey, you know what? Thanks for the scholarship. I'm sitting out the whole year. I'm not going to Blacksburg on a Tuesday night to play Virginia Tech. I'll see you in the ACC tournament, and I'll get you to the Elite Eight, and you'll be happy with that.
Damn, that's a fascinating thing, and I'd love to see that happen at Duke, to be quite honest with you. I would have loved Grant Hill more had he played at Michigan State or Georgetown or someplace else other than Duke.
What about Chris Webber, who was heavily recruited to go to Duke, decided to go to Michigan? Oh, he went to the black school. He went to the Fab Five. But if he were a Duke player, how would we perceive one Chris Webber?
A bit differently.
That's messed
up. But Marcella, what I think the hypocrisy is the point that you made, is there are a lot of people that had a problem with Duke because of the color of their superstars.
Yep.
And that, to me, is wrong. I could care less about the color of the superstar. I don't like the snobby and the whole little deal of, like, we're more ethical. We're doing it in a cleaner way than everybody else. We're not cheating. I'm like, no, man, if you're in NCAA basketball and the way this system is with amateurism, don't give me this stuff of you're better than Jerry Tarkanian, you're better than UNLV, you're better than Steve Fisher in Michigan. Get out of there. You're in the same game as them. You can't be a little bit pregnant. That was my problem with Duke. And that's why, again, I don't think it's – I think it's fair to criticize Duke as an elitist school and a group of – because they reveled in that whole deal. Their fans, and I believe Coach K, and the whole program reveled in it. We're better than everybody.
Well, careful how you got and received that message, because what really happened was every other program was going through scandal and Duke was silent. They're not sitting there applauding. They're not sitting there cheerleading. They're just sitting there saying, hey. And so what you now misperceive is, oh, they're reveling in this. Oh, look at them pointing their finger down at these other programs. What are you supposed to do? Admit your own guilt in the moments that other teams are getting caught? Yeah. So I think that messaging got a little confused to a lot of people who were just sitting there saying, when is Duke going to get caught? Duke's like, we're not.
I'll also say this. I think Coach K deserves some credit here for going after the one and dones, because the elitist move by Duke would have been to say, hey, we want kids who are going to come in and stay multi-years. Yeah. But they made the decision.
All he wants to do is win.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But a lot of old school coaches, coaches get stuck in this running the same game plan over and over again.
Because winning was most important.
It matters to him more than anything else.
Yes. And that's been my point about Duke. They were celebrated. Maybe it's just the media. And maybe Coach K and the players didn't want anything to do with it. I tend to doubt it. I think their fan base, and again, I spent some time in Durham. I've been in, I've watched games in Cameron Indoor. That group of fans, that program thought they were better than everybody else, and it drove me crazy. I can't, I love watching Christian Leighton play, any of them, Bobby Hurley, any of them play, but the little snobby attitude didn't sit right with me.
Was UNLV before their time? Because I think UNLV, that 90, that those teams would be even more beloved now than they were back then.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say snobby, because we always make that the connotation that comes, or the description of being an elitist. You can be elite in your thinking, even in what you have attained, but doesn't mean you're snobby. I don't look at Duke as snobby. What I looked at them as, they were a team that had an identity, a philosophy, and a program. And they were trying to plug situations into their program, where most programs look like, we're just trying to find talent, put it together, make gumbo, and see what happens. Coach K from day one said, no, there's a certain style, certain character, certain citizen that I'm looking for. And now it's so funny that all the people who talk about athletes when they transition into the real world, oh, they're not prepared at anything outside the game. And Coach K was like, day one, I'm trying to get guys who are well-rounded, who are prepared for more outside the game. And it all changed when Kyrie went first overall and became a champion. And then he realized, hey, what a one-and-done Kyrie. Right. I could keep doing this and still have great citizens.
Something about the Duke program, and maybe it's my bias because I'm from Indiana, because Coach K's off the Bobby Knight tree. Hmm. Indiana basketball didn't strike me the way Duke basketball does. And it's really the same blueprint. It's the same. Indiana had a lot of white stars, but they also had Isaiah Thomas in the early 80s, but they had Ken Benson. Steve Alford led them to a national championship. Indiana just didn't feel as snobby. And it's, again, maybe Indiana, different type of school than Duke. And so again,
early Indiana, because there was a 2.0 Indiana the latter years.
Yeah. I think the private school aspect that Duke is this you know, if you look at the history of Duke, they really blew up in the last, sort of like Georgetown, honestly. They used the basketball program to help create an elite aura that surrounds them. And I think as part of that, they definitely made the argument, we're better than everybody else around us. And now they basically do what everybody else does, which is take the one and done. So I think there's a lot of truth to the criticism of Coach Cal there.
Yeah, if Indiana had they have more grit than Duke. You throw a chair across the floor and that lasts 10, 15 years.
Yeah, Bobby Knight had no class. That's what I like.
Hey guys, Jason Whitlock here. Did you know you can fill out a tourney bracket at DraftKings this year? That's right. DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, has a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone fills out a bracket during the tournament. Might as well do it on the award-winning app with tons of free prizes. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. Let me give you a tip. I love the North Carolina Tar Heels to make it to the Final Four and possibly win it all. My sleeper team is Houston to make a long run. All right, you know how brackets work. Before tip-off of the first game of the tournament, just pick the winner of every game, every round. That's all there is to it. And the best part is you can play for free with code SFYS. You can even set up a private group for you and your friends and compete for bragging rights. Download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now. Use code SFYS to enter the Bracket Battle promotion for free and compete for your share of $64,000. That's code SFYS to enter the Bracket Battle for free. Only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
With Lock and Wiley, joined now by former Pro Bowl wide receiver T.J. Houston-Zada. Time now for a big story delivered by Papa John's. All right, let's move to Colin Kaepernick. A lot of people expect the activist quarterback to be back in the NFL this season, including his girlfriend, Nessa, who just complained on Twitter that Cap isn't listed as a top 100 free agent on NFL.com. Kaepernick himself was reportedly interested in the Dolphins quarterback job, but that opening just got filled by Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is set to sign for 2 years and $11 million, well below the $20 million price tag Cap had reportedly been seeking from the XFL and the AAF. And I think that explains, again, my theory has been blown up a bit. I thought Cap was headed to the Miami Dolphins. I made that prediction when they had the settlement. And I look at what Ryan Fitzpatrick signed for, and I wonder if Cap's asking price isn't the problem with him getting back into the NFL.
Yeah, I never believed that he was going to go to Miami. The Castro t-shirt, I mean, a lot of that. Not been the best place for him. If you talk about what really the issue is going on here, as you said, the asking price, I think we got a friendly game of whack-a-mole. You ever play that game at the arcade? You know whack-a-mole? My son love that game. You got the little rope and you got the little club. You got the little things just pop up. Here's whack-a-mole with Kaepernick. It's my contract cost. Okay, well, we'll pay you what you want. Whack. Oh, what about me kneeling? I don't know if I'm going to kneel. Whack. Okay, social justice. Do you support it? Yes, you do. No, you don't. Whack. And everything just keeps popping up to the point where he's asking just one more thing, one more penny than a team is comfortable going towards. Think about what Kaepernick is as a player. Good player. Potential still has an upside. Who knows? It's been 2 years since we've seen him on the field. But good player. certainly without any of the other things that come with Kaepernick, just a player X's and O's would be on a roster. But then you start looking at that player, and this is amazing, TJ can understand this. When you opt out of a contract because you know you're going to get cut, and then you have questions about your game, you never go somewhere else and get more money. You never go somewhere else and even get lateral pay. They take a hit. They get a piece of flesh from you. When you leave the game and you're 34th in win percentage, 32nd in completion percentage, or 31st in quarterback rating, I don't understand where you're thinking you're going to get this promotion or you're going to get this higher pay and higher salary. That's where Kaepernick is right now. He's playing a game with every other owner out there, and I think the owner's just tired of playing it.
The Ryan Fitzpatrick just signed 2 years, $11 million. You think they're going to give Colin Kaepernick 1 year, $20 million? There's no – number one, the last time you played, in the eyes of the NFL evaluators, you weren't very good. They're not going to give a quarterback that hasn't played football in 2 years $20 million a year. They just gave Fitz 2 years, $11 million. You're going to have to sign a contract. Personally, I believe it's over. It's over.
Yeah.
He'll never play in the NFL again. He'll never get an opportunity. But if he had an opportunity, his demands, what you said, would have had to been very low, and maybe we can give you an incentive-laden contract. But off top, your base salary, we're not giving you $20 million for 1 year after your last season was as bad as it was.
I think, though, where I was wrong, I think he still does want to play. And I've contended for a while that, hey, I don't think he wants to play football. I think he does. I think he wants to play at his price. I think his price is unreasonable, like we're all saying here. And because, again, I look at Nessa having complaints about a guy that hasn't played in 2 years. To me, of course he's not listed as one of the top 100 free agents. Right. He hasn't played in 2 years. But her complaints indicate to me, damn, they still really want to – he wants to play. I think this all comes down to money. I think – I do think when Jason Lockenflor at CBS put out his story that Cap's interested in the Miami job, I think they thought that was the opportunity. Mm. And I do think probably Miami looked at it and then just said, no, this is what we want to pay a quarterback for basically losing a bunch of games this season, because next year we're going to go after two.
But if he wants to play that bad,
yeah,
honestly, you take a contract similar to what Fitz has and says, I'm going to prove myself.
Or even less.
I'll prove myself, and if I don't, then obviously I can't play any. Take a lesser contract to prove yourself, to show that you deserve what you're asking for.
Yeah, Nessa complaints basically tell me, one, that NDA is not as tight as we think. I mean, I don't know if y'all ever signed an NDA. I'm not saying a damn thing.
You said you signed a couple, right?
Yeah, a few. Yeah, okay, I'm like, all right. That never happened. So this is interesting of her even saying this and directing it at the commissioner. But more importantly, to your point, Kaepernick, and I respect Kaepernick for this position because I was here as well. When you're retired and you're comfortable in your retirement, we know he had a settlement with the NFL. We don't know the numbers, but let's just assume something good. You have your Nike deal. You have whatever else comes from being who you are, Colin Kaepernick, the brand. It takes a lot to pull you out of retirement. So that asking price may go up, not because of his production, not because of what he thinks of himself as a quarterback. It's because how comfortable he is when he's retired.
But what about the... just the love for competition, just wanting to play.
Look, I was there. I'm going to just give you my...
If you have enough money, just the love and not playing for 2 years, you just want to get out there. Man. I know I would.
TJ, all right, when I was retired, you tell me when you were retired and you had enough, you're like, I'm good. I wasn't taking any job. People would call me, hey, you should coach here. Nah, bro.
They retired him. He didn't retire.
Well, he opted out of a contract. So if you opt out of a contract without another contract... I don't know what by the definition of retirement.
What did you just say earlier? He knew he was going to be released, so it's like, yep. Okay, I'm going to opt out.
So now you're playing a game. He's rolling the dice, and guess what? He's betting on himself. He's saying, I'm making X amount of money. To go back, it has to be X plus. It has to be 2X. It has to be 5X. And maybe that's where he is landing, and it's just too high based on what quarterback
I don't believe that because, again, if he were really comfortable, I don't think Nessa would say a word. And if he had got a boatload of money from the NFL, I don't think she'd say a word.
Think about what you just said. If he were to come back and fail, how that would burst the bubble of who Colin Kaepernick is in terms of imagery right now. Think about it. Right now, what he has to the day he dies is 16-4 touchdown interception ratio. The guy went to the Super Bowl. If you give him a chance and build a team around him, he could be perfect. You come back and fail in that moment and at a lesser value, that's not smart business. That's kind of hustling backwards.
That's a guy that doesn't want to compete. And that's a guy that, if I'm an NFL owner or coach,
They've shown nobody wants to give him an opportunity. I mean, it's black and white. He's never, I just don't see anybody give him an opportunity, especially Miami Dolphins. Everybody knows they're NBA tanking. they're trying to lose, and for them
he's
not
a great tanking quarterback. He loses well at a high rate. Seriously, and he would have been a
well.
Great
his
fit.
Last year, it's kind of hard to you can't stomp him that much. His last year, he was hurt. He was coming off injury. The 49ers were
lost.
A bad team,
right? And they
lost. They did exactly what Miami wants to do to get Tua.
Look good in a losing effort.
Yeah, and I'm shocked. And I still think there's an out. I don't know if Miami's done with quarterbacks. But again, it's about the price. Somebody's got to back up Fitzpatrick. And Fitzpatrick, I would take that bet. Fitzpatrick flames out wherever he plays at. Mm. I'd go be Miami's backup because this dude's going to flame out.
But if it's about the money, I mean, you wouldn't take you 2 years, take 11 that. Million. What you going to get as a backup?
2 years, 1 million? Stop.
I'll take it. Joined now by a couple of longtime NBA players, Kenyon Martin and Ketino Mobley. Let's move to the NBA. Where the Lakers fell to the lowly Knicks yesterday with LeBron's potential game-winning shot getting blocked as time expired. The block capped a fourth quarter in which LeBron missed 11 shots. The Lakers blew an 11-point lead, and the NBA worst Knicks completed a season sweep of L.A. Earlier in the game, LeBron didn't even bother to join the Lakers huddle, which caught the attention of Knicks legend and broadcaster Clyde Frazier.
This type of behavior is not... When you're the face of the NBA, I think you should be more a part of your team, folks. No matter what is going on in the public, you've got to be a part of the team. Maybe in the locker room, you're not, but you have to exhibit that type of togetherness in public, folks. And right now, we see he doesn't really care. So that's why this man is rumored to, this is this. Last season as the Laker coach.
All right, Clyde Frazier taking a lot of heat around the talk show circuit for criticizing LeBron here. I don't have a problem with what Clyde is saying because, and my deal is consistency. About being a leader is about consistent behavior. How do you behave when you're winning and things are going good? How do you behave when you're losing and things aren't going well? And I think it's clear as day, not just with the Bench incident, but almost everything about LeBron when the team things aren't going well changes from when the things are going well. I think LeBron's a bad leader, and I think he's going to struggle as the leader of the Lakers franchise moving forward.
I think these young guys are going to struggle to feel inspiration from LeBron as anticipated when LeBron lands on your squad. You're probably excited. You're so enthusiastic about, wow, I get to play with the best player playing right now and learn so much game from him. But what's happened is LeBron has protected himself, his brand, and created a safe distance from what this Lakers team looks like. We all know about the trade demands. And if you're one of these players, you're like, LeBron is almost trying to fatten me up to lead me to the slaughter because all he's trying to do is beef me up for trade value, to beef me up to actually be out of this place, not in this place. And I think that's just a difficult situation. The dynamics are obvious. The optics are real. That LeBron is like Kobe did this at a time. MJ did it in many facets of life. I got to create distance because I'm not a part of this if this is not going to be brand enhancing. And unfortunately, with a bunch of young guys that he doesn't believe that's going to support him or the brand.
So I think Clyde dead wrong. Mm. In this situation, if you look at his history where LeBron has sat on the bench, that's where he sits. Sits in the last seat. When I played, that's where I sat, the last seat. If he just came out of the game, he's not going to be a part of the timeout. If he had been sitting on the bench, he probably got up, saw that what was going on. It had nothing to do with him. He's engaged. He's talking to Tyson Chandler. Yeah. One of the trainers handing him something. He's talking to him. Clyde, he don't care. So all of a sudden, now he's not making the playoffs. He don't care. So the previous 15 years where everything, so he cared. Now all of a sudden I go playoffs. He don't care all of a sudden.
Yeah,
like I'm not buying. I think he's reaching.
There's a few things that I have a problem with. Keenan and I were talking about this during a break about LeBron. I disagree, Jason, when it comes to like he's a bad leader. Maybe this year, LeBron has been not spoiled, but LeBron has not only spoiled the fans and other people that surrounded him, but
it's been, he spoiled himself to where it's like his patience is short. Now, you never saw that because his other teams were so good. And the teams that weren't good or played bad and had bad stretches, you saw LeBron's personality come out. Very spoiled-like. He's super happy when things are going well, and then he's like poo-poo when things are going bad. We know that about LeBron. Can his leadership skills be better? Can his body language be better? Yes, it can. Kenyon and I were talking about this at, in the back. I was upset with, forget that sitting at the end of the bench, because that's what he always does. What I was upset, and Clyde, I love you, Clyde. But come on, man. Don't get into the narrative so much that you start to make things up about LeBron when it comes to that. Now check this one out. LeBron, I don't like, it's one of the things I don't like about LeBron. He doesn't have a go-to. Like, at the end of the game, even if they do the Knicks catch up, at the end of the game, he don't even have a go-to. Why would you let Mario, no disrespect to Mario, block your shot where you should be, you 6'8", 6'9", like Kenyon, you should be 15 feet from the basket waiting for a double team shooting over somebody for a game winner. Those are things that I don't like about LeBron. His body language when things are really bad, his go-tos at the end where he can close games out because he could have done it a few times this year and we would be in a different storyline. It's just, I don't know. But as far as being a leader, I think he's still a leader.
Decline?
Thank you. This decline? Looks like the Titanic decline? Sinking. Yeah. The greatest ship ever built is starting to sink. Mm-hmm. And again, when you go, 4-15 in mm-hmm. the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. Your decision makings on what type of shots you're taking, there's no ball movement. It was all ISO again. This was, and again, one of the things I've said about LeBron from the get-go, and again, it's not a criticism, it's more of a statement of fact. Mm-hmm. When you grow up the way he did, in poverty, no father, a very young mother, you start to rely on yourself over everybody else.
Yeah.
When I see LeBron as a basketball player isolating himself on the court, off the court, it's like, it's just me in this world.
So if he's winning, is that a problem, though?
Oh, look.
If he's winning, like,
he didn't just start.
So when he's winning, nobody has nothing to say. That's my whole thing.
It was a problem then.
He's still the same person, but he's winning.
But it shows now.
It was a problem then.
But it shows now.
Sometimes, Kenyon, you can be – you remember when you played, like, seventh grade basketball and how easy it was?
Yeah. Mm.
And then you got to the NBA and it's a bit tougher? Mm. Again, when he was so much more talented than everybody else at his peak in his 25 to 32-year-old space, you can get away with all this lack of leadership and different energy.
So you're saying his stats are fluffed, Jace?
No, I'm not saying stats.
No, but did you say decline, though?
I did say
Marcellus.
Decline.
No,
I don't think he's in decline. I think what's happening is he's not engaged. No matter what your skill set is, it must activate by you plugging in, mm-hmm. being connected to all those around you and hitting that switch. Yeah. We've all been out there before when you're just a little less lifeless. Like, you're out there like, I ain't got it today. That ain't the same you. And LeBron is in a zone right now where he's like, I ain't got it with them guys.
Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
They both leave because of a dysfunctional situation. Amari Cooper goes to.
Out. They got
right, but
traded.
I'm saying, yeah, okay, but they got traded. But my point I'm trying to make is how Amari Cooper was in Raiders and then Amari Cooper with the Cowboys.
Randy
totally
Moss.
Different. Randy Moss. Think about this. Who is his name? Khalil Mack. He goes from one of the best defensive players in the league. He is in the Raiders. He goes to Chicago, totally different person, personality-wise. And I think when you have a different base for LeBron James around him that he's used to, all of us have our little,
that's true.
Two personalities.
But let's go with Marcellus's analogy. Mm-hmm. At some point, you can disengage to a point where it's harder to reach the plug
that is true.
Ever again.
That's true.
Because reaching that plug and turning on and engaging, dude, I'm going to give you it. It's like being in a long-term marriage.
So, yeah,
sometimes the love goes away.
Yeah.
And if you let it go away, it ain't as easy as just flipping the switch
on,
and turning
like,
it back on.
I've been
on
his biggest critic about things, LeBron. But, like, people put everything on him. Like, he picked the talent. Like, he picked
the
coaches.
He
no.
Magic.
He picked the players.
No, he could probably have his input. But I can come to you and suggest some stuff. I can suggest anything. Are you going to do everything I suggest?
I'll say this. If you were Oprah Winfrey and you came on this show and said, hey, you should do X, Y, and Z.
We're talking about LeBron
X,
James.
X, Y, and Z. And that's what
in NBA basketball, he's Oprah Winfrey. And when he says, hey, I'd like this, this, and this.
I like it.
Generally speaking, they give it to you.
I can like a lot of things.
Right.
But right. And that it's Oprah my Winfrey decision.
Thing, Oprah Winfrey's a journalist.
Ultimately,
journalist.
Like, it's my That's decision dope. To pick the talent, right? When the Lakers put their roster together, I have never been a part of the Lakers organization. When they put their roster together this summer leading into the season, I said they're going to struggle.
Mm. Yeah, so did I.
Yeah. Well,
they picked that talent.
No, no, no. I think I LeBron think did.
I don't think
how? You told you think he told him to go get Lance Stevenson?
Yeah.
Not a chance.
No.
Not wow. a chance. With the history and all that's there? No. All the antics, all that stuff? No, no. LeBron don't want to be a part of that.
And Magic
Guess what?
Johnson.
They didn't have nobody else to sign.
I'm more conspiratorial.
That's okay.
I'm more conspiratorial. Again, I said it early on. I said, hey, this team's built to get Luke Walton fired.
If nobody got injured, they'd be in the playoffs.
Fault? Oh, stop.
And that's LeBron's fault?
Stop.
LeBron's fault?
If nobody got injured, they would be in the playoffs.
They'd be a seventh or eighth seed. Okay. They'd be going
still
nowhere.
The playoffs.
A seventh or eighth seed.
They'd still they'd be
going nowhere.
And LeBron James would be happy.
Oh,
but right now, he's not happy.
He'd
be in it.
I'm about ready to get stopped by Golden State.
He'll be in it.
None of this y'all better stop.
We've been talking about none of this.
We just went to the place where if a team stayed healthy for 82 games.
No.
Y'all came on TV prepared to say that.
No, what? To say what?
What?
LeBron James is out. Rondo was out. Kuzma was out.
I'm the one to tell you. I didn't think they had a good roster to start the season. So did I get him a shot? Not really. Not in the West. Not with that roster, with the way the NBA is shaped up now, with shooting has to be priority.
Yeah.
On that roster?
Right.
No.
That's hard.
I like Tyson Chandler, right?
What chance do you get the Clippers going into the season? Because sometimes
with your
you
Clippers?
Just overachieve.
With your Clippers?
Damn right. Sometimes you can overachieve.
You try to do that every
year.
You try to do that every year. You try to do that every
year. The Lakers, but they playing together. They're proving you don't need a superstar to be competitive.
Let me say this.
To be competitive, you don't need a superstar.
If we don't go with these if statements, if I was 100 pounds lighter, I'd be an adult film star.
Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks, options, ETFs, and cryptos, all commission-free. They strive to make financial services work for everyone, not just the wealthy. They provide a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. It's simple and intuitive, with a clear design of data presented in an easy-to-digest way. What are the values of the Robinhood app, you may ask? The design and ease of use. It has easy to understand charts and market data, so you can place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood's web platform also lets you view stock collections and analyst ratings of buy, hold, and sell for every stock. Also, you can learn by doing. Learn how to invest as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks and track favorite companies with your personalized news feed. You can even set custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up at speak.robinhood.com. That's speak, S-P-E-A-K, .robinhood.com.
Let's move to Oklahoma City, where the Thunder got blown out by Golden State this weekend. But perhaps more importantly, Russell Westbrook picked up his 16th technical foul of the year, triggering an automatic 1-game suspension just as his team's battle for a playoff position is heating up. After the game, Russ made it clear he didn't want to talk about his latest technical.
Russell, you got your 16th technical. Do you have any hopes of getting that one rescinded so you can play Monday night?
Next question. Russ, were you aware that you were at 15? Next question. Are you disappointed with yourself for picking up your 16th? Next question.
Paul George's team.
Yo, he's
it's Paul George's team.
Oh, man.
Russell Westbrook has exposed himself as an emotional wreck. He's great talent. Great talent. Plays hard. But does not have the right makeup to be the alpha and the leader of a championship team. It's Paul George's team. Russell Westbrook. Badly.
With that effort level, you're going to say he doesn't have the right makeup to be that invested. I mean, even to get those texts, he's engaged, he's all in, and maybe he's going past the point that you think is a great level for a leader. Maybe he's going in excess and to the point where it's costing him at times. But, man, you lead by example.
He's the OBJ of basketball.
No way.
Is that Rob Parker?
He's
the 100%. Odell Beckham Jr. of basketball.
Odell Beckham, what? No, he's been in the finals. He's MVP.
Yeah, stop that.
That is far from that.
So you want to take that away from him?
What?
His energy.
His energy, his aggression, his passion.
Right.
What do you do? You got to contain it. You have to master it. Your emotion can't be your master. You need to be the master of your emotions.
Daniel's son. It sounds great, but guess what? Yeah. You ain't going to get all of that intensity trying to master some emotions. Sometimes they got to get out of control. You got to go to that place.
Michael Jordan didn't play with intensity?
Yeah, and Michael Jordan got text too.
Michael Jordan had text. Michael Jordan fought people during the course of the game.
I mean, he beat up his coach, his teammates, and everybody. What do you mean stop?
Stop.
I wasn't there.
Comparing Russell Westbrook and Michael Jordan in terms of temperament on the court.
You brought up Michael, but you know what Kobe Bryant said? You know who I identify the most with when I'm watching basketball? Russell Westbrook. He has my energy. He has my kill. He has my desire. That's an amazing compliment.
He doesn't have his self-control.
Take a poll.
Yes, he do, because Kobe was getting texts too.
Put certain players in a poll together and ask NBA guys who they'd rather have.
Okay.
Ask guys who played the sport who they'd rather have.
Ask coaches who you'd rather, rather have.
And I guarantee they're going to say Russell Westbrook.
Who are we comparing him to? Who?
Put him in the pot. Name some.
Put him right there with Paul George. And I would say, based off of what we've seen this year, teams would take Paul George over Russell Westbrook.
Oklahoma City had the opportunity not to re-sign Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. Hey, look. Yeah. They Oklahoma City. They need
him. I don't care.
There's
30 other teams in the NBA. Guess what? He a free agent. All of them come knocking. Hey, 250.
It's no different than OBJ. Million.
But
it's
Jace,
no different than OBJ.
No.
250.
You keep saying OBJ.
Yeah.
Just like you say to us, how can you put Westbrook and Michael Jordan in? How can you put OBJ
with Russell Westbrook? OBJ's not a great player?
He not know Russell Westbrook yet. Russell Westbrook has accomplished way more than that man.
Why? Because they dance and they both
good. So I'm finna go against my own argument.
Right?
So Russ did what he did. He feel like he got fouled, right? They didn't call it.
Right.
Your thought process, everybody think he should have been like, oh, man, I got 15. I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't say that.
Right.
During the course of the game, during the action, during the heat of the battle, you not thinking about none of that.
How about Lawrence Taylor? Was Lawrence Taylor emotional?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you know, I would love to have Russell Westbrook on a football field.
Was Randy Moss emotional?
So Katie, was Randy Moss with that
was Randy Moss emotional?
No, not at all. He needed that passion.
Right, but I'm
he
saying, so it's emotional. Okay to have that.
He didn't have that kind
it's,
of emotional.
It's okay to have that on a football field.
I didn't say passion. I said emotional.
Not basketball.
Right. No, Randy Moss was not emotional on the football field. He was silly, not emotional.
Charles Barkley was the same way.
If I don't get the ball.
What?
I don't understand why you want to contain that emotion when you get all of the fruits of his game is from that emotion.
He's suspended tonight.
Oh, he gets suspended.
And it's
he may not do that again, but you see what Paul George said? Mm. Paul George says this. He keeps everybody playing at a high level.
Right.
He's going to be confrontational in a positive way to uplift us.
That was positive. Going after Klay Thompson.
That wasn't
the tech. He's setting the tone because they didn't play well.
Wasn't what he did to Klay.
That's what set the deck in motion.
What set the moment he didn't get the foul call was set the play in motion. Mm. Him hitting him was a regular foul. What he said to the ref got him to take.
But how about this one? He knows they're going to meet up in the finals. Yeah. Right? He knows that. Mm-hmm. So guess what he's doing? OKC didn't play that well that game at all. So maybe that frustration comes from that where he's telling his team subconsciously, hey, get your stuff together because we're going to meet them when it comes to the Western Conference Finals.
There are other ways to demonstrate that.
How?
You don't have to get a technical foul. You don't have to slam into Klay Thompson. You don't have to confront every fan.
I don't
know.
You ever got a tech?
Hell no, Marcel.
Wait a minute. You mad at me?
So guess what? I didn't got a
tech. Call me Rob Parker. Hey.
No, I said no way, no how.
So let me ask you
this. I said that.
So me and Catino, two competitive guys.
Yeah.
Temperament, if you ask people, different, right?
Yeah.
People look at me, I'm outspoken, I'm brash, I sit with...
Yes.
Course of the game.
I'm more reserved.
Guess what? Same situation going with Westbrook. He gonna get a tech, I'm gonna get a tech.
Did you not see him in the Big Three final?
I knew you was gonna say that.
Yes, I was there.
I knew you was gonna say that.
I was there, yes. I saw it firsthand, but it's the...
That's that lack of composure.
That's competitive...
But hold on, you know what it was?
No, he won.
How about this one?
I know he won.
So therefore, that's the competitive pressure that got him to the point.
You know what it was? I love Dante. I do. Disrespecting me and pointing your finger in my face, we talked about that. Yeah, see, don't you make me come over. Listen, disrespecting you and all that, but guess what? We, our team Power, was playing like crap, were we not? Yeah. We were playing like crap. I had to do something for us to build our energy back up.
Right. You don't have a long checkered history of this type of behavior. The man just got his 16th technical. He's going to have to sit out tonight's game.
He needed the rest.
Again.
Was he a great NBA player? Yes. Was Rasheed Wallace, was Charles Barkley, Russell Westbrook, some people, Draymond Green, some people, that's what they need to do.
Go to that special place.
Now you're right in the way where he needs to reserve. Sometimes you go, okay, now after this one, because it's not going to affect you guys. After this one, I'm going to chill out.
Okay,
because he went in the back and kicked himself, trust me. Everybody's
no,
on
he
everybody.
Didn't. He went and shook some ice and everybody.
Why you think he don't want to talk about it? Why you think he don't want to talk about it?
Because those questions are beneath him. That's why. I saw an
I'm pissed off at myself for getting my 16th technical get suspended.
Hey, next
question. Don't have to answer to you, him, nor him. I didn't look in the mirror. I'm pissed off at myself.
Next question. Next question.
And the best part about these shaking ice.
I love it, man.
This is what I think about your question. I'm going to shake this ice.
Look, so when Draymond Green cost Golden State a championship because he couldn't control him.
Yes. Yeah, he feels
y'all
bad.
Y'all defended it.
No, not at all.
He cost his team a championship.
He cost championships.
We had game 62. It don't.
Championship is totally different.
We're talking about a championship
I'm
and
so mad
a regular season
I'm
game.
I'm probably still not getting over it.
Listen.
Was there no evidence that Draymond was capable of doing that dumb stuff? And did LeBron not bait him into doing that because Draymond had
LeBron baited him into kicking him in his...
No. LeBron definitely baited him into that last technical foul that cost them that championship. And because LeBron has seen the evidence, this dude can't control himself. There are people looking at Westbrook right now that know, oh, you can push his buttons. Mm. He will snap. He will
do
something
do
silly that will hurt his team. Yes, he will. The signs are
there. I don't think he'll do that.
I don't think so.
I don't think he'll do that in the playoffs.
Smarter. Listen, he is way smarter than you give him credit for.
Yeah. Yes.
Way smarter than you give him
Let's
credit
Let's just
for.
See.
In the playoffs.
So Draymond's an idiot. Westbrook.
I said you're giving him way. He's way smarter.
Regular season.
He's way smarter than you're giving him credit for.
Westbrook won a regular season. Draymond's was. Westbrook's not doing that. Westbrook's not doing that in the finals.
Why?
He's not.
He's not.
He's too valuable
to
his team. And he knows that.
Yeah, he's not doing that.
He knows he's way too valuable
to his
team
to get
kicked out of that situation.
Today, I'm going to leave here after the show.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to drive past the McDonald's. Mm-hmm. If you had to bet money, what do you think? You think I'm going to pull into the McDonald's? You think I'm going to just drive by? No, if you had to bet money.
He's going
to
walk in. He ain't driving.
You're going to go in.
You're going
to. Because you want yours hot.
I've shown evidence.
Because you want your fries
that's
hot.
That's what I'll do.
You don't eat McDonald's.
You want your fries Russell Westbrook has shown you evidence of what he'll
you
do.
You don't eat
drive
McDonald's.
They come cold. I got to walk in and get that experience.
You don't eat McDonald's. We're going to Masters.
Whitlock and Wiley, TJ Houspenzada. Okay. Time for my favorite segment.
Hit him.
Anti-social. Got my Twitter off here.
All right.
Our social media manager, Darnell Smith, is here as well.
More merch.
You got a t-shirt, huh?
Merch.
Now.
Say it like that way.
Handing in t-shirts.
Doing no honeycomb iron-ons. That ain't merch.
Hey, people online want them, Marcel. That's
I see.
Hey.
Yeah. They want your weekly salary.
Yeah. They don't want that.
They want your money.
All right, what's popping, Darnell?
Yes, sir. So big man Joel Embiid celebrated his 25th birthday this weekend. Mm. Rapper Meek Mill was in attendance and joined in on the festivities by smashing a birthday cake into Embiid's face. Which got me thinking back to when Chris Carter hit you, Whitlock, with a nice birthday surprise. So my question is, who took the cake to the face better, Embiid or Whitlock?
Whitlock. Whitlock ain't coming out that
he
cake.
He like it. Look, he like, ooh.
Yeah, Embiid look a little
looks
salty.
Fake. That his looks fake.
Yeah, he ain't looking. Look, when they peel the cake back, he ain't all happy either. But Whitlock, he all, you in heaven right now. Look at how many layers? How many bundles?
That was some good cake.
Yeah, man, it's by far Whitlock, man. It's all on his suit and beat. Like, the cake didn't even break. It was almost like it wasn't real.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you what the problem with that was, man. Chris Carter enjoyed that way too much.
Oh, okay.
Way too much.
You start feeling a certain type of way, huh?
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
But you're getting a lot of... This was supposed to be an act, man. You're enjoying this way too
Cardboard
much.
Cardboard hit you in the face. You're like, come on, bro.
Hey, he did keep his stash on his face for a while.
Well, the little part of you kind of like, this ain't that funny? Because I always see that, and I'm always like, I don't know if I'm going to love it all. It was all good?
It was funny.
All right, because Joel Embiid looked like it ain't all good.
Yeah, it was my idea, actually.
Oh, there it is. There it is. look at that.
Anytime I can get cake in the face, I'm all good.
All right, here you go. Duly noted.
All right, what's next?
Yeah, here, moving on to the NFL. Odell Beckham Jr. posted it on Instagram, this pretty sick Photoshop from Rocky of him and Baker Mayfield racing with the caption, trying to see who the first one to the facility is going to be. Vegas Superbook now has the Browns as the favorites to win the AFC North. But, guys, do you agree the Browns are the team to beat?
No.
Yeah.
I think Pittsburgh's the team to beat, honestly. And I love, you know, I like what Cleveland's done. I do think they'll be better. I do like Baker Mayfield. But I love Big Ben and Mike Tomlin backed up against the wall. A lot of pressure on them, and I think they're going
to
perform.
Yeah, first to this image right here, every time I see that scene, I mean, a tear just right here. I mean, just the work it takes to get where you want to get, because they go, din, 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 and then they in the ring, oh, snap. I'm sorry. are they the team to beat? No, because they haven't won it yet. Like, you can't be the team to beat just off of paper. You got to go out there and get it. Like you said, Pittsburgh motivation is going to be high. Baltimore lost a couple, picked up a couple. We're going to see where they land as well.
Yeah, they're not the team to beat, but they – Pittsburgh lost, you lose their best two offensive players in A.B. and Le'Veon Bell. On paper, if the success of the Steelers and the Ravens haven't been there on paper, you look at these rosters and you say, by far and away, Cleveland has the best roster offensively and defensively.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, hedging my bets, I would say no, but yes, at the same time, kind of makes no sense.
Yeah, most exciting team in that division to watch.
I mean, they got the two best receivers on the same team, the second best quarterback, probably at worst, the second best defense.
Collection of running backs.
You just took a shot at Andy Dalton.
No.
What?
Who would you take, Baker Mayfield or Andy Dalton?
I'm
taking Baker.
Didn't you play with Andy Dalton?
Did not.
Oh, my bad.
He got out of there.
Easy shot. That was an easy shot to take. All right,
Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, man, so yesterday's game was one LeBron probably wants to forget. Twitter was all over him after he was seen sitting at the end of the bench by himself while the rest of the team was together. And to top it all off, he got his game-winning shot attempt blocked as time ran out. And that inspired a ton of memes online. These are my top three.
Ton of memes.
Number one was MJ laughing at LeBron. Is this your GOAT right here? Number two, LeBron praying, Father, forgive me, for I do not know what I am doing. Shout out to my guy at Jaws_531 for that meme. And number three, my favorite, LeBron deactivated. It's my favorite because I made it. So I asked you guys, what's your favorite meme of the day?
Of those three, I like the Jordan one, but not so much. I like the second one the best.
Yeah, that's me too.
Father, forgive me, for I don't know what I'm doing.
You down there praying, bro. It got ugly in Lakerland when you down there praying.
Help me, please.
I will say this, because I think it's getting lost in all the LeBron criticism and we're seeing him go through a bad patch. I still think he's the GOAT. I still think he's the greatest player to ever play the game. I'm just going to put that out there. Even if I got criticism tomorrow or the Lakers are sorry, he's still the man.
Man, they on LeBron head, man.
It's
a good thing because next year we'll be back.
Nah, don't do that.
We'll be back.
Y'all ain't been there in the last 6 years. Why is it 7? I've been saying that every year.
It's a new year. You look forward to the new year.
Yeah, I don't know,
man. I'm kind of jumping ship. I thought LeBron was going to come back next year bigger and better than ever. I'm now starting to jump ship a little bit. All right, time for the Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, what you got?
It's Darnell.
This is my guy. My guy.
My question of the day.
My guy. My guy.
My question.
Question
of the day.
285 pounds.
All right, guys. So Russell Wilson pretty much shot down the rumor that he was going to play in New York, and people think his wife Sierra would rather live in NYC for her career. So my question is, how much say should Sierra or any spouse have in deciding where an athlete plays?
Zero. Absolutely zero. You have too few years to go get this money. So we play for two teams. The one inside this house, we on the same team. And that one is going out there to get as much as we can in this 5, 10, 15-year window. We are not prioritizing anything else over getting this, unless that is bigger than this. And most spouses is not coming to play with that. So it's about this team. We playing on Team Wilson.
Yeah, I'm with you on
zero.
That one.
Zero.
Zero.
This is how it works. You talk to them about it. But you're really just talking to them about it. They really have no say. So you just wanting them to feel like they're included.
Your wife is watching right now.
She's going to say something to me
when I'm
here.
Be careful, TJ. My wife agreed. She's like, that's right, baby.
You discuss it with them. But ultimately, You got to do what you feel is best.
Yeah.
And the Sierra situation is like this. You can record an album in a studio in Seattle, and if you need to travel to New York, LA, get on that plane and go.
Go get it.
But you discuss it with him, but ultimately, none.
And it's not even gender-based. If you were in the WNBA, your brother talking about, well, you know, I got this job down the street. Boy, we going where we got to go to play these games to go get that dough and this opportunity. Because it's going to go by.
It's so short-lived.
It's so short-lived, and when it goes by, you don't want to have any regrets talking about you were trying to do something else.
So the only twist I'll add to this in terms of, I saw a lot of my friends get married early, shortly after college, maybe some in college.
TJ.
And then TJ. It compromises. This is not about athletics. Mm. This is just about career. Once you get married, now your career choices are a bit compromised. They're not your own. They're shared and they're together. And I was able, in building my career, I was able to go to Bloomington, Indiana, Charlotte, North Carolina, Ann Arbor, Michigan, Kansas City.
Yeah.
I had a lot more freedom, particularly early in my career, where I only had to think about myself, and it helped me get ahead. And that's why I try to, again, I go back to my advice, don't take on any lifelong responsibilities until after age 25.
I mean, if you're just married and you have no kid, what do you think coaches do? Oh, we got a better opportunity. Oh, we're going to take this job. Oh, we got a better opportunity. We're going to take this job. It becomes a problem when you have kids and you got to uproot them. They have friends. Yeah. They got to go to a different school. But if it's just you and the wife, oh, babe, we got to go.
Yeah. But Jason taking that advice a little too strong. I mean, you 51. What part of your career are you in?
You're not moving. He's still grinding, Marcel.
I'm out here grinding.
I got goals.
You're like, don't take on any responsibilities until you're 90.
Now I'm ready.
Eat happiness, no responsibility.
Right.
All right, welcome back with Locked and Wiley. TJ Husmanzada is back with us. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell are gone, but the Steelers drama just keeps on rolling. This weekend, former Steelers running back Josh Harris claimed on Twitter that Ben Roethlisberger once fumbled on purpose at the end of a game just to spite then offensive coordinator Todd Haley, who had called a play instead of just running out the clock and having Ben take a knee. When I first heard this, I thought it was crazy, and I thought, hey, this is a guy that played 1 year in the NFL, and he's piping off about Big Ben. Then you watch the tape, and you go, damn.
You're like, what?
That happened.
Wait a minute.
That happened.
You know exactly what the play is, too. You ain't going to put that ball out there, and the fullback is back there.
And why are you falling backwards on that play? See, that's when you know you're overcompensating, because you know I got to play this off.
The fall down
is too much sauce. But let me say this. When I heard this story, I said, oh, the petty police are out, and they're going to arrest Ben Roethlisberger for being petty. And I told you this maybe a couple weeks ago, that I really felt that Antonio Brown, the crux of his argument was, all respect to Juju Smith-Schuster, but there's no damn way, Ben, that he should have two fewer targets than me. Targets, that means we go back, drop back the pass, oh, you see him in the course of a year. And that led to him having more yards and more receptions and the MVP. And I think that Antonio was just sitting there saying, Ben, this is my seventh great year. I've been getting double teamed for multiple years. We figured this out. How come we couldn't figure it out this year? Oh, because Ben is going to passively, aggressively find ways to show that our relationship is a little off center, and he shows it on the field. When this happened, I was like, more evidence to the petty police. They after you, Ben.
Yeah, for me, it's number one. I didn't really get it. If you look at it, Harris tweeted, he's earned the right to publicly criticize his teammates. And then in the next breath, oh, he didn't really connect with his teammates. I was like, Jason, like, man, this can't be true. And when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is true. What I don't understand is this, Ben, just take a knee.
No. He was trying to show up Todd Haley.
Yeah. Okay, what do you think is worse, though?
Todd Haley called a running play.
What do you think is worse? If a coach calls a running play, I'm not running that. I'm just going to take a knee. I'm going to do what I want to do. Now you really got a problem, because he can just say.
But this is kind of better to do it this way, because he's like, I ran your play. Look what the outcome was. We almost fumbled the ball. Yeah. Embarrassment.
And this is the thing. And this is what people haven't realized is this. These things This happened in 2014. Mm. A lot of stuff has been going on in Pittsburgh that's been kind of swept under the rug. You talking about the targets with Antonio Brown and Juju. Man, this has been festering for years.
Yeah.
And nothing has ever gotten out. Nobody has said a word about it. But the guys in the organization, the guys in the locker room, they all know Ben's been tripping. But they sweep it under the rug because he's the quarterback of the team. And Antonio Brown just had enough.
Look, yeah, I was in a situation. I just want to tell this story. When I was in San Diego, you know, you start to meet all your new teammates, and they hit you with some of them old stories of yesterday and folklore. And I remember one old lineman told me they intentionally let Ryan Leaf get the brakes beat off of him in one game because they were tired of his noise and tired of his mess. And it happens a lot of times when you're out there in gamesmanships. A lot of it's in jest. You just like, you even say the story. Hey, somebody comes up to you. Hey, man, let me know what's a pass play. Let me know what's a run play.
Yeah.
But there are times when guys like, I'm going to take this out on you. And that's just kind of the dynamics at times in athletics.
Marcel, your point about Brown and Juju Smith and the targets or whatever, I agree with you that this lends credibility to Antonio Brown's side of the story. I have been saying, again, Ben Roethlisberger was for a long time my favorite quarterback, my favorite player to watch. I've always said he's immature. Mm. And if you go back to early in his career when he had the problems in his personal life and off-field behavior, all stemming from an immaturity and a frat boy, I can get away with anything mentality, I just don't think that all goes away. All of it. Maybe he's cleaned up his behavior off the field in that regard, but the signs of immaturity and pettiness are still there. And they show, again, that's why I've said he's a bad leader, and he's as big a part of the dysfunction in Pittsburgh as Antonio Brown, as the heat that Mike Tomlin gets, who was Joey Porter, the assistant coach. It's Big Ben, and when it's the quarterback and he's the highest paid guy, and he gets celebrated the most in the media. It just,
where do they go from here? He's not changing.
You know what?
He's not changing.
It's funny you said mature, and then you say, oh, well, he may be more mature now, but then I'm threatening to retire just so I can get attention, appreciation.
No, in that regard.
Yeah.
The problems he was having, sexual assault, maybe he grew out of that. But in other areas, he still is very immature.
Oh, yeah. When you say that the retirement and you're sitting in the locker room like, dude, are you really going to retire or not? We respect you if you're going to retire, but if you're just doing it to play some games, and then you double down, oh, Mason Rudolph gets drafted. Man, I ain't tutoring this dude behind. I have never. I mean, I got drafted behind Bruce Smith. Bruce Smith didn't sit. This is Bruce Smith. Like, Ben is here. Bruce Smith is here. He didn't sit there and say, I ain't never. Like, because that's what greats do.
That's what you do.
And then they're like, this is how they really think in their ego. I could give you all the game in the world. You still ain't going to beat me. You still not going to be better than me. And Ben can even go to that place to look at Mason Rudolph? That's crazy.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about Zion Williamson. Also, your Big Dummy of the Day award, I'm sure, goes to Marcellus.
No, the Big Dummy of the Day goes to whatever Big Dummy had. The Big Dummy of the Day go to whoever compared Odell Beckham Jr. to Russell Westbrook.
Ah, get him. Here he go, land.
Don't Russell Westbrook got a ring? I mean, don't Russell Wilson got a ring?
Russell Wilson does, not Westbrook.
Not Westbrook.
No, he don't. But how you going to compare ODB to Russell Westbrook?
ODB is Old Dirty Bastard from a rap song.
You get the hat, damn it.
You get the hat. You the Big Dummy.
You the Big Dummy.
All right, let's go to our highlight.
He punch drunk.
Yeah.
Earlier this
I guess it happened, huh?
About Zion Williamson. I think it's hypocritical and shallow to jump on the Duke bandwagon simply because you like Zion Williamson. Duke is still Duke. Elitist, snobby, and easy to root against.
Elite is the conversation, but it's also the commonality. All these programs, no matter how it is seen and how it is perceived, they all want elite athletes, black, white, nuclear family, or dysfunctional.
All right, before I ask for your take, are those capri boxing shorts you have on? How they can go up to your chest and still hang below your knee. Capri
itty
boxing.
Bitty, man. Yeah.
No, these is your childhood training pants. That's the only thing I can find to fit me. You don't remember?
Yeah, right. Them 12 teams.
All right, I'm sorry for asking. What's your take on our discussion about Duke?
Yeah.
Coach K, pow, pow. Duke basketball, Muhammad Ali.
Oh, man, where are you going with that? What are you talking about?
Shut your face, Merkulous. I'm about to break this down for you. See, first of all, in the beginning, most of America loved Cassius Clay.
Cassius Marcellus Clay, yeah.
First of all, that's the only reason you remember that. And his middle name was Merkulous, if you really want to know. Y'all don't even remember Cassius Clay, man. Mm. They call him Louisville Lip. You know, he won the gold medal back in the 1960 Olympics. Mm-hmm. America loved him.
What that got to do with Duke basketball?
Merkulous, stop it. Stop. Okay, quit interrupting me, okay? I'm trying to tell you. Cassius Clay is Danny Ferry at Duke, okay? Everybody loved Duke when he was everybody loved Danny Ferry when he was at Duke. Mm-hmm. Won him three titles in a row. I mean, took him to the finals three times, didn't he?
Three final fours.
Took him to three final fours. Then when they went to Christian Laettner, that's when we started not liking him. See, when Cassius Clay changed his name to Muhammad Ali, that's when America started hating him.
Interesting. I still don't get it, though. Like, connect.
Damn, son, can I finish? Cassius converted his religion. Hmm. And America didn't like that in the 60s and 70s. Duke converted to Christian. And now America... Now we like them again. See how times we don't like them when they went to Christian. Now you see how times change a little bit.
No.
Come on, man.
Everybody Hell loves no. Duke.
No.
Everybody loves Duke.
That's the point I'm trying to make, dummy. And look what happened to Ali. After about 30 years, they changed it. Now everybody loves him. You remember he lit the torch for the Olympics? I almost burnt Atlanta up.
Man, stop.
And then then everybody loved him. It was fashionable. It was cool. And then all of a sudden, the people that hated him swore up and down, "Oh, we love Ali. Ali Mantumbo. Ali Mantumbo."
They said.
That's not, you know, that's almost pretty good. That's not bad. I could have used that in the Whitlaw.
I told you. I should have been the host of the show. Okay? All right. So look here, man. People are sheep. You can program them to say, do, think anything you want to. It's like skinny leg jeans. You got men running around here in skinny leg jeans, cutting off all their circulation with all their business after it. Looking like Khloe Kardashian at an All-Star, at an NBA All-Star weekend. Just because somebody told y'all skinny leg jeans is cute, don't mean that you're supposed to do it. Mm. Hey, bro, Uncle Jimmy, I'm gonna be honest, Uncle Jimmy's still wearing his pair of Levi's from 1972. They got a Husky on the side right here. You understand me?
Oh, we know. We seen him.
All right, let me get to my approval rating.
Got Zion jokes, Williamson.
We're almost out of time. All right, I got Zion. I think he's my second highest rated. He's a 96 overall. Just below Bill Belichick. 24, job performance, all-time greatest. 25, character. The guy came back and played. 23, authenticity.
All-time greatness before the tournament. You got him at 24.
You make people love Duke. Who can do that?
They love Duke. What if they go out in the first round? You're going to be like, oh.
I'd love that.
You would love that. You're hating on him. Hey, man, I got him close. He's a GOAT for me as well. He's a phenomenon. Look forward to his future.